and welcome to episode 415 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. My name's Vince Hunt, and joining me as always is the creator of the comic series Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the man who's covered head to toe in Factor 70 right now. He looks like Casper. It's Tony Esmond.
I'm shit at wearing that sort of thing or putting it on.
Oh, I hate it.
Yeah, Kfalpi was reminding me when we went to Toronto, I was running between shade. Because I thought my face was burning.
Yeah, as we speak, folks, welcome to the show. It's going to be another great one this week. As we speak, it's quite hot in the UK at this point in time.
We will now complain about it for the rest of the month.
And we're going to complain about it a bit because we're pasty white men.
That's what the Brits do.
We read comics and stay in the dark.
That's it's our special subject is fucking moaning and talking about the weather.
Yeah.
The only place I don't get sunburn is on my back because of the matted black hair there.
Oh, you know. God, yeah. Just like, what, your skunk stripe?
Yeah.
I went to a boot sale today, like with Eagle Eye, looking for comics and trades. I saw a couple, but they're way overpriced, and I was boiling hot. I was like, oh, I can't be bothered to do this anymore.
Let's get it into the sort of positive. Let's immediately switch gears a little bit and talk about boot sales. Now, for those people around the world who won't necessarily know what we're talking about in terms of boot sales, Dan, would you like to
tell?
Yeah.
Essentially, you pay a price for your car. You drive into usually a field, and you pop the boot open, the trunk of your car, if you're an American, and you set out a table, and then basically you sell your bits and bobs that you want to get rid of. That's a very English expression, is it? Bits and bobs.
Bits and bobs. Yeah, there's quite a lot of old tat at it, isn't
there? Yeah, there is a hell of a lot of old tat. I mean, if you want to go in there and get like secondhand clothes, Nerf guns,
I mean, I would imagine like
weird stuff.
Broken action figures.
Yeah.
It's like when people have a yard sale in America.
Yes.
Like they just put everything out and they just.
It's the new wave jumble sale, isn't it? We used to have jumble sales here, didn't we? Now we don't.
Yeah.
But the area we go to is quite a nice area. So the stuff they're selling is usually like a bit of a better quality.
Caviar trays and things like that, is it?
Yeah, stuff like that, yeah. So there was some
hostess trolleys.
There were some comics there, but it's like, mate, these are all. Like secondhand at a boot sale, I'm not going to be like paying top prices for them. And they were selling some huge, great, like free trades, great big whacking ones. And like there was like, oh, 50 quid for the lot. So, mate, no, ain't no way, ain't doing that.
What trades?
I can't remember the bloody name of it.
Three substantial sort of trades, like a Marvel omnibus or one of those big Walking Dead bastards.
Exactly. Like that. And I was like, nah, not gonna go for that. And well, I didn't particularly like the title, but there's some like really grotty old kind of comics that looked like I'd been read a couple of hundred times. They were selling for like 2 quid. I was like, nah, I'm all right.
Yeah. Put them on eBay, mate. Go bother something else.
Yeah. So apart from that, yeah.
That's the problem with comics, isn't it? It used to be they used to just be able to get them cheaply, but now everyone thinks whatever comics they've got in their loft. It's a bit like vinyl, isn't it? But records.
Yeah. It used to be
worth millions.
Years ago, you could go to one of those boot sales, pick up loads of comics, loads of trades. You could also get like loads of old retro gaming consoles for like 10, 20 quid.
That's another
now
thing,
they're all wrapped well up.
Yeah, yeah. Do you know where you can get loads of great comics, though?
Good value.
I know. Yeah, Comic House.
It's a Comic House. Yeah.
Where else are you going to go?
Where else, indeed? If you were listening to this show, you've obviously heard this ad before in all its terrible quality.
Mm.
But if you haven't, then allow me to talk about Comic House for a bit, because Comic House are the indie comic marketplace with a difference, because they love indie and small press comics just as much as you do. And I say you, listener, because if you're listening to this, there's a good chance you just like comics and indie comics. If you go to comichouse.com, there's an enormous sort of database there full of like great indie titles. If you yourself self-publish, you can list your book on there as well. It's another avenue to get your work out into the world. They've got a features section on the site, and also they have an app, Digital Comics, which is more and more the hotness. It's just standard now, isn't it? But
it looks like that's the way we're all going to be going soon, maybe.
Yes. But if you want to check out some new digital indie comics, then definitely get your hands on the Comic House app. It's basically like Netflix for comics, subscription service, or other streaming services, of course. For £3 a month, or whatever your currency is in the world, you get access to an enormous library of digital indie comics, which is growing all the time. Dan, normally at this point you jump in. Would you like to?
I'm going to jump in now. Yes, Viper is going to be uploaded this week, hopefully on the 12th of June. And to celebrate for 2 weeks, I'm going to offer free shipping on anyone in the UK for buying a physical copy. So if you go to my Big Cartel store, which is, I've got the address handy, dzpublishing.bigcartel.com. I'll tweet about this during the week and put it in the show notes, hopefully. If you enter the code ACP, you can get free shipping in the UK. So it's £8 for a copy of Crimson Dawn and £6 for a Viper Crime Has a New Enemy.
Wow. Yeah. Value.
You
need to get on board with this because Dan's said a little bit about future plans. Who knows? Who knows when they'll come to fruition?
Well, he said a very rude phrase that he's going to include.
If you like Viper, you want to get on board, you want to add those books to your collection. And yes, Viper's going on there, and there's amazing stuff across the board that's already on there as well, from guest past, present, and future, no doubt. There's a 14-day free trial. So if you go to comichouse.com, you can find out more about it, sign up, and just start reading great comics in the summertime.
In the summertime.
Will Smith says.
But stay in the shade, because obviously, like, if you've got your tablet and you've got the sunlight getting on it.
You included my singing last week.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't you?
I liked it. I'd forgotten I'd done it.
Oh, I never forgot it. I still hum it before I fall asleep.
We recorded early, didn't we, last week? Yeah. And then I saved it for my sort of 450 mile drive home. And I got right to the end and I was sort of absentmindedly listening to the outro music. I went, oh, fuck me, he's got me singing.
You never know what's going to happen on this show. The only thing that's guaranteed is there will be talk about comics. There will be enthusiastic talk about comics, and you'll discover some great indie books that you need to know about and check out, etc. There'll probably be some nonsensical opinions from the three of us, which are usually
undoubtedly
they're uninformed, and they're personally our own opinions, and we look forward to hearing yours.
Yeah.
But also, you know, it could be madness, it could be craziness, or it could be what happened to you, Tony?
Oh. What do you mean? Oh, where did I go last weekend?
Where did you go?
Yeah. So I think because we recorded early last weekend, you'd only got the Thursday excitement, didn't you, where I'd been to FP and met the two guys. So after that, Friday morning was, I got a little tour of Glasgow off Mr. Cannon, who took me to the shittiest bit of Glasgow. And then we went to a hipster coffee shop, which is quite fun. And then Saturday, and then I went to City Centre Comics, which is you have to get on the tube to go to. It's pretty cool. Not that, it's a good shop. Lots of back issues, lots of old trade, stuff like that. And bought a couple of things there. Had a chat with the dude who warmed up once I said I knew Canon. So that was good. And then Saturday was the con. And I hung out. It's nice to be a punter at a con. We don't do it enough, do we?
No, not at all. I'm really bad on that this year.
Yeah. And me and Johnny Cannon and Al Henderson hung about. We met before. And then we sort of wandered the aisles, chatting to people, moaning, laughing at people. I had quite a few pictures with furries, which I sent you.
It's always a highlight for me.
Yeah.
One dude, I said, can I have a picture of you? And he went, yes, come with me straight away. And Al was holding my phone with the camera turned on. And I went, it's got sexual quickly. And he dragged me off and he says, call me Scrappy. And I went, no, I'm not calling you that. And he kept talking to me. I said, I just want a picture with you, mate. And then he said, I've got something in my carrier bag. And he had this sort of dirty carrier bag. And he said, I've got something in here for you. I'm going, I don't want anything out of that carrier bag, mate.
No.
We sort of stood at the end of this like empty corridor. It was getting weird fast. Al's face was getting slowly more screwed up. Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. You know?
And I said a picture with him and left. That was quite a fun one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Man, that's like going off road.
Yeah. I saw he took his head off later and pulled his head off later. And I couldn't.
What?
He pulled his head thing off, and I said, I did. And I think Johnny Cannon was saying, oh, there's that furry with he's taking his hat off, sort of thing. And I said, I don't want the illusion ruined.
Yeah.
But it was not a brilliant con, but it was made fun by having people to hang out with. I think that's the nature of a lot of cons.
I think we've all been there, haven't we?
Yeah, I think so. So just to name some of the people, Dave Craner from the Brew Gooders, he was there. Pete Watson, had a good chat with him, came down to the pub, as did Dave. Steve Ingrams was good, he came to the pub as well, and nice. Third Bear Press, nice, I think. Gustavo was there, I got a nice, Dave Cook was there next to him. I got a great Forge sketch from, head sketch from Gustavo. Brendan Manley's now an X-Men artist, so that's going in the vault already. Andy CT was there from Hall Comics, had a good chat with him, and he seems to think that I'm stealing Vince's youth. Gary Watson's and family, and Brian Rankin, it's good to see them. Not as many stalls as last year. No real names at this con, really.
I think David Arger, he pulled out the last.
So David Arger, I think, can't remember who put it. Somebody put it on the Slack because they noticed he'd been cancelled on the website as couldn't make it. But I don't think they posted it on their socials. They don't seem to post much on them, to be fair.
Okay, fair enough.
So he wasn't there. So it wasn't really, there was no real names there. There was a couple of back issue sellers. We got some nice back issues from. I wrote a long thing. If anyone wants to see my full opinions of it and photographs and all that sort of thing, I didn't think I wrote a thing on it that seems to have got just fucking caught fire. It seems to have had hundreds, if not thousands, of reads in the last week.
Trouble is, there doesn't seem to be that kind of like boots on the ground coverage of UK cons.
Doesn't appear to be anymore, does it?
No. I could be really wrong there, but
yeah,
it doesn't seem to come across my.
Al was saying the same. He said he used to like seeing con reports because you could try and spot yourself in the crowd and stuff, couldn't you? Mm. You know. So I did that. That was fun. We all went to the pub. Of course, it was the weekend that Celtic won, so I wore my Celtic shirt on the drive to Dundee. And I got in a lift at the hotel in Dundee, and some dude went, "Oh, such and such has left. He's going to Tottenham or something." And I went, "I'll be honest with you, man. I've never seen a football game in my life. I just bought this because I quite like the shirt." And he went, "Oh, right, okay." I said, "But my mum's a Glaswegian Catholic, so does that count?" He went, you're in, son." He kept saying to me like trying to ask me to come for a drink with him in the bar. I said, "No, I'm all right, I've got a booking, I'll leave it." So I avoided him for the rest of the weekend.
I can bullshit about football for a good 5-10 minutes, and then you catch me out.
Yeah, I was stuck in a lift with him. I think was it Andrew or Gregson or something? He said, "Gregson's gone to Tottenham." And I went, I just thought, I can't. No, I'm stuck in a lift. I can't bullshit my way through this.
I'd be like, "Fuck, tell me about it, mate."
Yeah.
No, literally, tell me about it.
Judas. What a Judas. Oh, he's not really. Oh, yeah, he's not. Oh. Yeah, it's like that. Yeah, yeah.
We're having a laugh.
Perhaps I got it wrong. There's absolutely non-committal language about everything.
But we had quite a few drinks in this pub, and everyone had dinner together and that. It was not a real funny night. And then I had to walk back through Glasgow at like, I don't know, 10 o'clock on the same day that they'd won the league or something. Fucking hell, there's just people laying in the road, like, you know, just people falling over, throwing up everywhere. I was like, fucking, it was like the 80s again,
walking
through town, you know. So then I went to Dundee and I met up with Tom, Nando, Mike and Dave. We had a bit of lunch and then we recorded. That comic smell, yeah. And they very kindly let me sit in one of their podcasts. We talked about Mad Magazine, which was lovely. And it's real social event for those guys. So they get together at one of their houses and they all bring snacks and we all sort of pass around comics and they have little gifts of comics to each other. And I took them up a little present for inviting me. And it's really nice, man. Yeah.
That's awesome.
Although Mike did say something that I'm not going to say because we've agreed to be nice before guests come on. But he did say something rather saucy to me on the drive there because he gave me a lift there and I did wonder whether I'd make it out alive. But
interesting. Because they're quite freeform and like we're obviously highly professional. And
yeah.
What? Dan, what show do you think you're on?
I just quite like making that joke every so often.
Yeah, but really nice it was. And I think they're going to cut a bit of it out because me and Dave talked about white pudding or something for about 20 minutes. I didn't really know what it was, and he was telling me about it. And then me and Mike Sadarkat had a chat about crisps for about 20 minutes. You know, it's one of those sort of things. And I said to Tom, "Have we started yet?" He went, "Oh yeah, I've been recording all of this." I went, "Oh, I wish you told me." Yeah. And I was like,
very comics focused, that one.
Yeah.
Why put it in crisps?
And to be fair, apart from the company, I think it was nice to go and do that thing at that comic smell because it's kind of very comics positive, you know.
Yeah.
And Glasgow had kind of let me down a little bit, I think. I think mostly because I'd booked it before any guests and that were announced.
Yeah.
Because they didn't announce them for a month until a month beforehand.
No, they did leave it very late. I remember you sort of saying, like, there's still nothing announced for this, which is kind of not great for getting people interested in a con. Do you know what I mean? You kind of want to know what you're getting for what bang you're getting for your buck, as it were.
Yeah, exactly. And it was in my little sort of solo trip. So I didn't have any family or anything with me, or my kid or my sister or anything with me. So I just did this sort of solo trip, which is good when you're on your own because people can't see you crying in your hotel room, can they?
I mean, you can say what you like about Lawless, Thought Bubble, et cetera, et cetera. They have their con schedule up early, their guests.
Yeah, I mean, they've already announced guests, haven't they?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's the thing. Yeah, it was a bit sort of last minute, I think. Yeah, a little bit half-assed, I'm going to say.
Okay.
But I had a good time, and I bought some good comics, and I got some art. There you go. Which I will resell for millions in a few years. So that's fine.
Splendid.
There you go.
And you got home safe.
Yeah. Yes. Oh, I was driving off. 455 miles it was.
Oof.
Yeah. Yeah. I did it in one. I just filled up petrol, kept rocking, and did it in one go.
Yeah.
So I was much amused. I had a couple of Earth 2 podcasts save up.
Nice.
And 11 o'clock comics, you know, so sort of past the time. It was a good idea. Imagine
Werther's.
Yeah. Yeah.
Imagine if it was this weekend, it'd been quite warm. We'd have to have that AC running.
Oh, yeah, man. Imagine.
Yeah, podcasts make it fly by. I've got to say.
Yeah, they do. Yeah, they do. Most of them do. Yeah.
AC, what you mean? Awesome comics?
Yeah.
There you go. And speaking of awesome comics, we're delving into the world of web comics and stuff this week, of which one of our trio is a veteran. But
I'm all over it now, by the way. Yeah. You know, I'm all over it now.
You're over everything. You're like butter, just spread over over bread.
It
improves the taste.
Yeah. Yeah.
Thank you, Dan.
And very salty.
And easy to slide into. What?
Nope. But what we will do?
No.
We've had this conversation.
No.
5 minutes ago.
No. But what we do have is a conversation about webcomics. Now, of course, we've drafted in some help to talk about this. So, I think there's quite a few webcomic creators out there right now. So, without spoiling
this is going to be a masterclass.
Well, we're going to learn a lot.
Well, we're involved. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So, check it out. Right then, listeners, as we said, we are looking at webcomics this week. A genre, obviously, we're a little bit sort of familiar with, obviously with the Great Dan B. But as you know, it's an enormous culture of comics. And even with Dan here, our knowledge only goes so far, especially me and Tony, because we're very simple people, aren't we, Tony?
Yeah, I don't understand the internet.
No. So this week, we decided to have a returning guest on to talk to us about that side of publishing.
She's kept us waiting 5 years, but she's back.
And she's certainly been busy in the meantime. It's our pleasure to welcome to the show once again creator of the ongoing webcomic Sombulus and one of the collective known as Spider Forest, Christina Major. Welcome back.
Thank you. It's so good to be here again. It's been 5 years. Oh my goodness.
And that gone quickly, eh? Yeah, isn't it?
Yeah.
We've just probably put out, what, 500 pages since then, I'm going to say?
Several, yes. Yeah. We won't think about that. Webcomic time is its own beast.
That's true. Yeah. No pressure. Yeah.
No. And certainly, like you say, webcomic time and publishing itself is its own unique sort of format of comics publishing that obviously a lot of our lovely listeners know about. We've spoken a lot about webtoons and different creators like Spider Forest, etc. But there may be some people who are more familiar with like the printed book, or only think about when they think about making comics, they only think about like the printed comics that they get on a weekly newsstand. So we're going to look into sort of why webcomics are a decent avenue to go for.
I think the more you get into the craft of making comics, the more important format and pacing and stuff becomes. And there's a big gulf between putting a page out and putting a comic out, isn't there? There really is, you know, as you told us before, Dan. Yeah.
And Christina, obviously your book has been going for how many years has Sombulus been going now?
Sombulus started in 2010, and I've been updating with 2 pages a week since then. So we're going on 13 years,
awesome.
Over 1,000 pages in the archive. It's my epic fantasy adventure thing. I take a little bit of Terry Pratchett and I take a little bit of anime and I kind of mush it all together in kind of a light fantasy romp. I've just been having a really good time all these years, so I can't stop. Help!
It shows in the book. I mean, you talk about like, oh, it's this epic fantasy, and certainly we've said on the show before, people say, oh, my comic is going to be this epic fantasy, and they get like half a comic through and then they they don't finish it. Whereas you're here 13 years later, still, it is an epic fantasy tale that you're telling. So probably there's been quite a few learnings since you started making webcomics. Is that fair to say?
That is very fair. That is a fair assessment. It's just, and like you said, there is a honeymoon phase. Everybody has their idea, right? Everybody like watches a show or their favorite thing. For me, it was video games. I was playing a lot of JRPGs back in the 90s and just really like involved in this, like, yeah, I'm going to make this comic. It's going to be about these characters. And so part of webcomics is that, but part of webcomics is also kind of finding a rhythm that works with your life, that works with all the different things that are going on. And then just kind of webcomics in and of themselves are very interesting because your audience evolves with you. You evolve as a creator. You're making different things. Like as the years have gone by, more things have been important to me to try to involve into my story. So like that kind of changes a little bit. You kind of have to be a little flexible. And then also your readership kind of, you get more readers in, people stop reading for a while or they'll catch up a little later. And so just kind of that dynamic that you build with your audience is really unique to webcomics. And you can't really get that in the same way with printed comics. So that's one of the things that I really fell in love with that format.
Yes, and it's both free and freeing, I'm going to say. You know, the fact that it is free for people just to go and read.
Yeah.
Is in itself freeing, that allows you, you know, you're not having to think, what am I doing for the money's worth here? You know, is it, you know, there's a bit of that as well, do you think, or?
Yeah, I would say so. And it's just really important to kind of pace yourself and take that temperature with your life, because the beauty of webcomics is that you're not typically listening to a publisher. You don't have deadlines besides the ones that you impose on yourself.
Yeah.
So you can kind of take it at
you
your own
pace. You are a masochist, basically. Yeah.
You kind of are. You're your own boss, so there's nobody to hate but yourself. But but no, it is like kind of this really important process of getting to know your own pace and getting to know your own style and what's going to be energizing for you and freeing for you, and what's going to make you feel like, oh my gosh, I'm locked in this thing and I'm not making money and I'm not doing anything else. What am I doing? It's a weird balance, but I've found that it's told me a lot about myself over the years. So,
and I'm guessing with a webcomic, you tend to get, I mean, feedback. That we live in the world of feedback now. We don't know, compared to the sort of the comics of pre-internet, but I'm guessing you get an awful lot of feedback per page. Do you, even if it's just numbers and stuff, isn't it?
Yeah. You can kind of put Google Analytics on there. You can take a look at what people are saying. And then, of course, you have the opportunity on social media to tell people, hey, my webcomic updated this week, and people can respond, and kind of seeing that direct response, seeing people connect with your characters, like, that's the best. I love that feeling so much.
Yeah. One good thing, I don't get a lot of time to do it, but like, if there's people interacting with your story, is imagine like your favorite comic creator put up 2 pages a week, and every time they put a page up, you could ask them questions and talk about it, and they'd respond.
Yeah.
That's one of the strengths and the powers of having a webcomic.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Yeah.
A good and a bad thing, I'm guessing.
Can be.
Can be.
Guys, that laugh needs exploration. Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's people can kind of be off base. Maybe they're going off on their own theories, or they're bringing whatever is going on in their life and home into your comic section. So there is a little bit of moderation. There is a little bit of like, hey, you know, let's keep this friendly and welcoming for everybody, that you kind of have to think about once you start getting a readership.
Yeah.
It's not too bad. I think I kind of err on the side of like, hey, like, let's keep everything in good faith here. If somebody's acting in bad faith, I just kind of cut that off right then and there. So I think it works out for me. But also another thing that helps me out right now is we kind of mentioned the Spider-Forest Webcomic Collective.
Yeah.
And that's just a group of other independent webcomic creators We've all banded together and we do like cross promo things. We do an anthology every year. We've done podcast episodes. We've done all kinds of stuff. And but one of the other things on a day-to-day basis is we have a Discord community, and we have a hub where we kind of talk about these things. We talk about, you know, the readers, the people that are being weird or something like that. And there's just no... I don't know if I would have made it in webcomics this far if I didn't have that group of peers who understood what I was going through. Gotcha. And right, yeah. I could reach out to. So webcomics are really fun. They can be, you can do whatever you want. You don't have to answer to anybody, but they can also be very isolating if you're the one man show. You're not collaborating with other people. Some people are writers and they hire artists, or they work with a buddy who's an artist or whatever. But that's pretty much it. There aren't big teams like other creators. There's not like a publisher that's going to manage this stuff for you. So there's just a lot of kind of social skills that go into finding out how to manage your webcomic and how to do this. And that's where kind of having a group of people to reach out to is very invaluable.
And that's an internal question in regards to any kind of comics, do you have an editor? So is it just you, mate? Is it just you who thinks the stuff, but do you have someone in a, you know, editor with a small E role for you, or do you use anyone to bounce ideas, story ideas, you know, beyond the opinions they have on already published stuff?
I definitely reach out to my creative community for that. Other peers, other writers who I respect can really kind of help you bounce ideas. And I'm like that too. I love reading other people's web comics. I love kind of thinking about their characters, thinking about what happens, and talking to them when they're hitting a wall, like, what's going on here? What should I do with this plot line? It's just really nice to have other people, to have that group to reach out to.
I'm trying to think of the biggest team that I've come across in a webcomic, and it might only be like writer-artist.
There's people who hire out. Sometimes I hire some of my flatting work out when I'm really busy. But that's kind of more the freelance sort of, they don't have any creative say in the direction of the comic.
Is that more to
keep
you on schedule with your like 2 pages a week sort of deadline that you've got?
I would do that. And also just from my Patreon, I was, that's one of the goals that I set, you know, to kind of help give my audience the opportunity to help me make the pages that I want to make at the pace I want to make them.
I can't remember if you had a Patreon when you came on before. Is that a newer thing?
I think I had it before,
it was fairly new then, wasn't it? I'm guessing.
Yeah. Patreon, for people who aren't familiar, it's a website that you can go and you can make an account. And if you're a creator of podcasts or whatever, people can donate to your creative project. And what that looks like for webcomics is a lot of times people are fundraising for computer upgrades, for hard drive space, for whatever. People are
hosting fees.
Hosting fees, absolutely. People are just looking to hire out inking or flatting help to make it go faster or smoother for them. People want to put out bonus content, and they ask their readers, hey, if you want to see this bonus story, you can come onto my Patreon and donate. Or if you want to see my pages early, I'm releasing them a couple weeks early on Patreon, or I'm releasing the whole chapter on Patreon. You can read it all ahead of my public update schedule. And that can be very compelling for people. And that can be one way that your readership can show some support. Tangible support for you.
Yeah, I think Patreon as well works best with the webcomic creator, the immediate sort of, because there's that immediate connection with the readers, etc., rather than like the physical books so much. Because there is that immediate interaction that a webcomic creator will have with these readers who want to see more, who want to see like fan art, they want to see the behind the scenes, don't they?
Yeah.
And certainly it's obviously, if you choose to go into webcomics, you're front lines is maybe the wrong word for it, but you are kind of like, you're right there, front and center, the front row, with people's enjoyment of it. Mm-hmm. Normally, if you make a printed book, we work in the dark for 6 months, we print the book, it goes to conventions, it goes online, you've got a digital copy. But when you're doing 2 pages a week, webcomics also have the comments section, don't they? Or like, yeah. That's something we've all seen them. If you look at any YouTube videos, they're probably a minefield of horror. But but comic people are used to that interactivity now, aren't they? And I think webcomics, the comments section can be a vital part of it sometimes, can't it? The printed books don't have. Yeah, the printed books don't have that, do they, Dan?
Well, it's essentially as well, you've got the whole, if you're doing 2 pages a week, you're kind of constantly drip feeding your audience new content all the time and getting them aboard. And I'm sure you've got this, Christina, you build up your fan base and your readership. So if you do decide to put out a printed copy of your book, you've hopefully got readers already invested in your characters and your plot lines. So it's a good way of kind of, it's a double-edged sword of promoting yourself by also making comics.
Yeah, absolutely. And kind of getting there in people's minds to say, you know, I'm working here. I'm a person. Like, I think that it's very easy for people to forget that the media that consume comes from people. Like, we're all watching something and it's by Netflix. It's by this publisher name. Like, it's not by a person. Right. And like, that's, you know, it's kind of a shame that that people don't have that more personal connection. And even
there's a purity
Webtoon,
to it, isn't there? I think, yeah.
Like, even on Webtoon, I see like a lot of people say, "Oh, this is a Webtoon by Webtoon." It's not like a person is reading my comments, and so they'll comment on whatever they're reading, like they're sitting on the couch in front of with their friends and commenting, "Oh, that guy's hair looks funny," or whatever, and they don't understand, "Oh, there's a person and they're reading this," and that's unfortunate.
Some people can take that to heart, can't they? If you kind of, there's times I've read comments and I'm like, bloody hell, like steady on. But when you get some good feedback, it's like,
sorry about that, Dan,
because your webcomic is very personal to you, isn't it? I mean, it's like, if you're doing a comics for a publisher, you're not seeing that immediate, like, you're not necessarily seeing the readers, or, you know, hearing what
it's
saying.
Straight from the hand to the eyes of the reader, isn't it? A webcomic.
So it goods and bads, anything. But
I've told this story before a couple of times, but in issue 9 in Vanguard, where most of the characters get killed off, I had a reader say that I'm out, I'm not reading this again, I can't believe you've done this. And then a couple of issues later, they commented again and said, "Dan, I'm really sorry I walked away. I can see you knew what you was doing, and
that's nice.
I've caught back up with it and I'm really enjoying it." So,
aww,
that's great. Trust me.
It was hard writing those messages to you, Dan, but eventually
here we are. You forgave me.
Oh my goodness.
It's interesting bringing up kind of webtoons, because that's kind of the change, the landscape in some respects. These kind of web comics, especially on apps now, that how do you think that
that's a whole new landscape since the last
have
time
they improved
talked,
it yeah. or it's just another web comic, or is it detracted from the ordinary browsing web comic reading experience? That's a tough question.
I definitely think Webtoon has helped bring a lot of people who didn't even know they could read comics on the internet into the thing, because that's not for everybody, right? Not everybody wants to have their reading experience on a screen, like, or to check in every day or whatever. And they've really helped normalize that, I would say. They have an app which is convenient for readers to use, convenient for readers to follow a bunch of things and get push notifications when anything updates. So and they've also kind of standardized that. We've always had RSS feeds, which help. You can put any kind of website on an RSS feed and it'll tell you when it updates, but it doesn't always display the pages consistently. It doesn't always work. Sometimes it breaks and stuff. So Webtoon has kind of handled all of the technical aspects of presenting the comic in a way that is consumable to the general public, that makes sense for the general public to understand. And so that's kind of where their growth has come from. But from the creator side, they do have a couple different things. They have Webtoons Originals, which is the ones that they give you money for, and Webtoon Canvas, which is the ones where creators might not make any kind of money. They have some sort of ad deals that you can, if you have so many readers, you get this much a month, and okay, they're changing the rules on those, drawing the line in the sand almost every year to make it kind of worse and worse for webcomic creators. Originals kind of get a little more money and a little more status and a little more promotion from the Webtoon platform, but a lot of people can find themselves lost in the shuffle if they don't have that kind of promotion. Yeah. And if they don't get that kind of promotion, they don't get the numbers to make that financially viable if that's one of their goals.
There's been a conversation about that today, funny enough, mate. We were talking about it, I think, just before you came online, about there's been a lot of conversation about people not earning much from Webtoons.
Yeah. I've been seeing that too. Twitter is really kind of going at it today. Everybody is sharing their stories about that. It's really unfortunate that there isn't a lot of money to be had or communications between, I've heard some bad stories about just webcomic publishers or Webtoons or something, just not communicating. I understand if the money isn't there. Like, this is my personal opinion. I understand if the money isn't there. Small publishers aren't working with a lot of money, but I think the communication has to be there.
Yeah.
The transparency, isn't it, really?
Yeah. I mean, certainly for someone like Webtoon, something like Lore Olympus, he's like a front and center. That's a figurehead, isn't it? So people are probably communicating. I mean, this may not happen, but, like, you know, people are probably in a lot of communication with them to keep them, because it's become such a thing to keep them sweet, so they're still on the platform, you know, because that creator has now gotten to a point where, you know, I'm seeing their books in my local bookstore. Do you know what I mean? Mm. And the published things. But the books that aren't, the comics that aren't Lore Olympus, that are further down, you know, the hundreds that are on Webtoon, what's the communication like between the publisher and the individual? Do you know what I mean? It's sort of, it's tricky, isn't it?
But then making money on webcomics has always been, for me at least, the proposition, which is kind of like, this is really rough. I mean, you're not, for me, I used to run, God, this is going back, was it Project Wonderful? You could have their ads hosted on your site, but that folded years ago, and then it was Google Ads. But, like, I found they're just cluttering up the page and I'm getting virtually nothing for it.
So yeah, when you've got to scroll down to look at something because there's so loads of ads, that really puts me off the page.
Yeah, I just don't run ads.
You
know? The only ad I run, which is not so much of an ad, is on Spider-Force, you have a bar at the top that shows you other comics that are currently updating, which is well handy to get a lot of cross-promotion. But, yeah, I think patrons, like, a great way for webcomics to kind of get a few quid to help out, essentially.
Absolutely.
Do you, and I suppose you provide content that they're not going to get otherwise on Patreon. That's kind of the way to do it, isn't it, I guess.
Yeah, early releases or behind the scenes sorts of things. Those are all kind of good Patreon fodder sometimes. I think one fun thing that I did a couple years back was I had a part where a character had to make a decision in the plot, and I actually put a Patreon poll.
That's great.
My readers could decide what he was going to do. So it was this choose your own adventure sort of thing. Yeah. And people got really invested, and people started arguing like, he's got to do this. He has to go to this place because otherwise blah, 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 terrible things are going to happen. And I was just on the moon, like, hearing all these people's theories and people getting so invested in what the character was going to do. So there's a lot of fun.
Well, isn't it? You know, fun promotion.
Yeah. I think that's the thing. You got to make it fun for yourself.
Yeah.
Because
we're cynical beings now, aren't we? I think. And we see something that's just fun like that, we're all over it. But if we, being cynical, we see stuff and we think, that's just transparently just attention grabbing. But I think that sort of thing, I'm all for. Yeah. Because you're engaging with your base, aren't you, there?
Yeah. It's just so much fun when you can kind of think of creative ways to engage your audience, and it's just something that you can't get anywhere else, and that's why I love the medium, why I don't think I could ever like go 100% print. Like, yeah. I do my Kickstarters. I have 3 books out, and you know, I go to conventions with them and all that stuff, but I don't think it's ever going to stop being a webcomic. I just have to have that kind of connection.
And yeah. a big fan will read it on the web, and then will want to buy it, because I kind of, if there's a webcomic I'm really into, I'm almost worried there's an ephemeral nature to the internet sometimes, because I'm old. And I think, well, maybe that website will close or something will happen, you know, or the files will be lost or they'll get hacked or something. And at least I've got this nice book full of it, you know, as well, that can just sit on my shelf. That's what I really like about it, I think.
The bonus, if you read Vanguard in the print edition, it's been proofread. So, the page I put up just they're done by me, so they're usually littered with many errors.
well that leads on to a question we sort of hinted at before we started recording, Christina, is the world of webcomics has significantly changed since we had you on last. And I think probably for me the most accessible, the webcomics I seem to read the most, What Do We Mean By Yesterday by Ben Mara. I read stuff that's an Instagram webcomic.
Right, okay.
Have you dipped your toe in that at all? Because that seems to be another whole world, doesn't it? Then it seems to get a lot of clicks, the Instagram ones.
Mm. Yeah. Oh, gosh, yeah. I have opinions about Instagram. Because their algorithm is weird and stuff. Yeah, I think it totally works if you have some, you know, standalone comics that are, you could break them up into different you know, panels or whatever, and people can swipe through them, and so that works for them. For me, I'm kind of telling a full story. I can't really feature like a page and then have people an easy way for people to see the next page, so it's not something I dip my toe in much, besides like kind of the promotional aspect, besides telling people I'm going to be at such and such convention or blah 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 blah. I do think that the algorithm has changed utterly. So much. Everyone wants to do video now. I don't get that. Like, just no. I don't have the energy for all of the video promotions and the TikTok and all.
I actually think that Instagram is more. This is how I separate it. So I'll go to Dan's page and I'll read a nice page of a comic. To me, that kind of feels like comics to me. But if I'm reading, say, Daily Peanuts or something like that on Instagram, it feels like it's a newspaper strip. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
It's almost like Instagram feels like the newspaper strip of version of comics, while stuff like yours feels more like a comic. I know that. I don't want to say it like that, but you know what I mean? It makes feel like that.
Because there's
the
The
other one is, and I see that if you're, I don't know if you're on the Marvel app, Christina, but about half of their new releases are these Infinity comics, which are the Infinity. I'm guessing. Bear in mind, I'm very old. I know what I'm talking about. They're what called infinity scrolls. Is that right? Where the story sort of just scrolls up,
scroll down. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So that seems to be like a growing trend on the Marvel app, and it tends to be the more sort of Gwenpool type.
Is that
Deadpool
something that they've taken
of
from the webtoon sort of?
Oh, totally, man, totally.
Yeah.
Marvel haven't had an original idea in 20 years, have they? So do you know what I mean? It's like, is that something you'd consider? Have you had a play with it, or?
I did start converting my my comic to mobile format, like the scrolling format, because I do think that's actually a very interesting phenomenon. And I found myself writing differently. I found myself,
it's a different reading experience as well.
Yeah,
completely. Yeah.
Structuring things differently than I would if it was a page that people read, because you kind of find the beats, you kind of find where things hit. And so it was an interesting challenge for me. It wasn't something that I continued to do because I was just having, I'm one person, and like reformatting thousands of pages is kind of a tricky proposition, but I am really fascinated by that format and how people are consuming comics like that. It's almost like watching a scene at a time on TV instead of like a you know, just one page installment or whatever, because you can't it for me, it takes about like 8 pages to get through a scene. Yeah. But an episode, they're called episodes on Webtoons. And I think that kind of restructures right. people's brains into expecting this, you know, a full scene.
It's strange. I've seen like stuff where the art is very minimal, as in like you've got a character and a backdrop. And then they might change the backdrop in another scene and like put the character with slightly different.
It's almost like an animation cell sometimes.
Yeah, it's like they've swapping elements in and out, but there's not lots of hand-drawn stuff. And essentially it's like a drama and people just don't seem to be, because they're doing really well. And they just flick through these endless scroll reading these stories. And obviously the story's keeping in grits because the art is sort of just, it's decent, but it's like perfunctory. It's just serving that function of telling you who's speaking. I thought, these ain't going to do very well. And then, like, I'm like a couple of issues in, like, oh, yeah, I'm loving this.
Yeah. Yeah, the scrolling thing is you're almost like, you have to scroll really quickly because a whole person doesn't take up a screen. You know, it's more than that.
Mm.
And you're able to, like, go down and down and down. Like, when I'm reading a comic, even digitally, I know how many pages I'm in and everything. And I'm like, when am I going to get to the bottom of this fucking story? Excuse my French. But, do you know what I mean? It's like,
you can do action with it in really interesting ways. It's sort of like if someone's falling and you're scrolling it up and they're falling down and then something happens, it's a different experience.
Yeah, it breaks down the sort of narrative sometimes. Because when I've read some scrolling comics and there'll be a scene that is really, you know, just, it's like a wall of a tonal colour with just one line of dialogue and you're following it down and then just one line of dialogue and you're following it down. Whereas, you know, which works for that format, but I don't know. With me, I like the sort of standard ones that like Zombieless and Vanguard. I like that old school comic page. Do you know what I mean? I like seeing that as well. I mean, the thing about it is there's so many people that would say web comics aren't really for me. There's now seemingly, whether it be that Instagram, you know, newspaper strips or the webtoons or the Spider Forest stuff, there's a web comic for everyone in some ways.
Yeah.
There's a reading format that is ideal that, you know, so people maybe shouldn't, even now, there's less of a chance for them to say, no, not really for me. Because there is something for everyone, isn't there?
Yeah, absolutely. Even genre-wise, I think we saw a lot of people who were just like, well, comics are only superhero stuff. That's all it is. If I'm not into that, then I'm not into comics. And like they can be about anything, really. Mm. So I think that's kind of one of the beauties of what webcomics brought to the comic scene was like, hey, anybody with a story idea can make it and like attract an audience based on that. There are so many niches. There are so many things. And we really need to open up the world of comics so people understand that there's a million things out there.
Yeah. Yeah. So for those, we've been speaking obviously about the reading aspect of webcomics, but for those people out there, you lovely listeners who just think, oh, I want to make my first comic. Why should they sort of look at webcomics as an alternative to just a straight up print book, you know?
I think the marketing aspect can certainly be a thing. Like I find it more difficult to market a print volume than starting up a webcomic. I also think there's kind of this you know, this honeymoon period where you are saying, oh yeah, I'd like to start a webcomic, I'm gonna go do that, and then you get through like your first fun idea and then you're out. And so a webcomic can be a low investment way to figure out that side of you that like, okay, I thought I wanted to do a webcomic for like 3 weeks, but it's kind of getting bad now and I can't commit to this. So it's out there. People found value in whatever they were able to read from you, but also you're not leaving people on the hook by saying, hey, I'm doing a Kickstarter for the first volume of my thing, and then come to find out that you can't get 20 pages through your thing, and then you've stolen everybody's money.
Oh, I'm sure there's some Kickstarters that were a great idea, you know, over a couple of alcoholic beverages. They started up a Kickstarter and then they thought about the thing that they actually have to make and decided not to make it.
So there's that, but also just I think it's something that you can do on your own. It's something you can do on your own pace. It's something that you do kind of have to learn how to write for web comics to make each page intriguing in and of itself, or each episode if you're kind of going the webtoon format. But once you figure that out, then it gets easier. You kind of get into a rhythm with it, and you kind of find a way to incorporate it into your life. And I think a lot of people kind of get stuck in this. One day I'm going to write a book. One day I'm going to have the time to do blah, 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 blah. And that's not realistic. We all have busy lives. Things are going on all the time. So this is kind of a practice in what kind of time can I make? What kind of increments? Like, I don't need to have like a whole year where nothing ever happens to me to make a comic. I can go into it right now and I can do as much as I can with the time that I have, and it will still have value. It will still be readable and it will still attract an audience. And I think that's a power in webcomics that a lot of other types of comics might not have.
Yeah, totally. But also, it's a lot of work, isn't it? You've got to be prepared to and also work ahead. Like, just say, oh, I want to make a webcomic. And I've been listening to this show. Oh, I've learned so much. But before they've actually published the first
page, I've made two.
how far, you know, in terms of like how far should they get ahead before publishing posting the first page, the scheduling, you know, what advice would you have for people when it comes to that kind of stuff?
Oh, gosh. So a lot of people like to plan out the entire story, or at least in an outline form, before they even set pen to paper to draw anything. That is very smart. I am not very smart. I have a rough idea and I kind of know how scenes are going to go, but I like to keep things a little looser for myself. I do recommend having at least a month or two of buffer pages that you've already drawn that have not gone public yet, because it can take a little bit of time to figure out, okay, what comes after this? What comes next? Or, oh gosh, something really happened and I'm super busy at work right now. I'm not able to draw once a week like I thought I was going to be able to draw once a week. So I need that time to kind of not draw for a bit. So that can be very helpful. I also think taking breaks between chapters or something is a really smart idea, just to kind of keep that stamina. And this is something that we talk about a lot in my other podcast, which is the Screen Tones webcomic podcast, just kind of incorporating healthy habits for yourself to not burn out. Keep, making sure that you're keeping it. You're taking tabs and you're taking your temperature on like all the steps of it and what you're liking and what you're not liking and how it's making you feel. Just kind of trying to plan to the best of your ability, but keeping it flexible. And knowing that webcomics take a long time. I've been at it for 13 years. I'm still, trying to wrap up some of the story elements, and it's just, you're going to be here for a while. The more you can plan, the shorter that time might be. And like, also the fact of the matter is, a lot of times when people are starting webcomics, they're not in the same place in their life when, 5 or 10 years down the road, maybe they have a kid, maybe they have a new job or whatever. And so kind of keeping it short can make sure that you have that room so that you can finish a comic in like 3 or 4 years and you could say, okay, that was good. Do I want to do another one? Do I want to keep going with this, or am I done? So a lot of people will advise, start with shorter comics, start with things that you can finish. Finishing comics is a whole skill of itself.
A lot of people can start them, can't they? Yeah, you're right. Yeah.
Yeah, and you're only going to learn it by doing it. So so do jump in, but to the best of your ability, have a plan.
We can bring this round to Spider-Force, because currently we've got the applications are open, or are they shut? I can't remember.
Yes. We're open during the month of June for applications. If you are an independent webcomic creator who's already got like chapter or two up and you're regularly updating, you can go ahead and go to spiderforest.com/apply. We've got all kinds of information about different stuff that you can that we're looking for in our web comics, but mostly we're just we're a cool group of people. We're a good community. We have a Discord chat that is open to the public, and we do monthly streaming, like we do live drawing streaming. So if you kind of want to brush up on your art, there's that. You can also kind of ask for advice about, hey, I'm setting up a webcomic site, how do I do that? And people will zoom in and give you all of their recommendations. Or I'm having trouble drawing this scene. Does this person convey anger enough? You know, people will kind of give you drawing tips or whatever. It's just a really fun community to be in. I think it's helped me a lot over the years. So yeah, check it out.
So also, I've been up there in the most recent issue of Vanguard. I forgot since about 6 or 7 pages ago that I hadn't taken it off of hiatus. So it wasn't getting light pushed in Spider Forest. So I've got on the forums. Oh, bloody hell, I forgot about this. And
Dan!
Yeah, that's really not very good. Trouble is, it's like juggling. There's so many balls that I keep up in the air. It's,
yeah, it is. It is. I don't blame anybody. It's tricky to kind of keep up with this thing, but I do feel like the time investment is worth it.
Yeah.
I really like our yearly anthologies. Any of our members can kind of submit short anthology stories depending on what kind of theme that we're going for the year, and we do a little Kickstarter and we get it published and printed out. And so a lot of times it's like some of our webcomic creators don't ever print their stuff. It doesn't ever make it to print. And so this is like one thing that they could hold in their hands or take to conventions and say, yeah, I'm in this book. And that can be very valuable and fun for people.
Do you know if Spider Forest has a table at Thought Bubble this year?
They do. Oh, they're going to be at Thought Bubble. So BK Spiders, get on that.
Last time I was at Thought Bubble, I bought two of the anthologies. Was it Webs?
Threads.
And another one. Threads. Yes. And another one. Yes. Yeah. Brill. That's fantastic.
So worldwide, Spider Forest is available in both screen and print format.
Can I ask why it's called Spider Forest?
Because it's web comics. So the spider web and the forest is the paper, like the
okay.
I didn't know that.
There you go.
I didn't name it, but that's the explanation.
I should have checked with you. I was going to ask that before we started. It suddenly occurred to me that you might not know, but you clearly are very well educated in you.
So you could have asked me.
Yeah.
We've been getting some guff from people who don't like spiders, and they're like, is it scary? Is it a horror place? And I'm like, no, it's not. That's just the name that we have because spiders and web comics. But it's all genres. It's basically genre fiction, lots of different things.
You must be loving it at the moment because fantasy is in another golden age at the moment, isn't it?
We see so many great fantasy stories at Spider Forest. Like every year when we open up application season, there's just amazing stuff that people are doing, and especially with like kind of the Critical Role D&D
sort of return to gaming, isn't it, almost at the moment.
You mix the D&D with especially like the Japanese anime RPG type style and like certainly manga and anime type shows, it's such an influence, isn't it, on the creators.
Massive.
Touching this briefly, I think a lot of the kind of when we had the first big push of webcomics years ago, a lot of those artists were initially sort of galvanized into it by early manga and stuff hitting the shores and stuff like the Final Fantasy games and getting like into webcomics that way. That was a way to tell similar stories. Would you say that, Christina, you were in any way kind of, I know you mentioned Japanese RPGs earlier.
So my first comic ever was The Legend of Zelda Link to the Past comic they ran in like the 1990 Nintendo Power magazine.
Wow.
So It was they recently did a collected book, so I didn't have to keep my like old 90s stack of Nintendo Power comics anymore. But I really did come to it through video games. I love like that long story and getting to know the characters and things like that. So yeah, that was a huge influence for me. And when I started drawing comics, they were, you know, just me and a sketchbook in high school, just drawing my comic, and my readers were like my friends who I could pass it to so when the teacher wasn't looking. And so they would just nice. And it was this Legend of Zelda kind of ripoff thing where I added my own character and kind of sidelined everybody else, and eventually I figured out, oh yeah, okay, I guess I want to do my own comic. I don't actually want to tell Legend of Zelda comics. I want to do my own thing. So but that's where it all started for me, and I love all the stuff that's happened since.
And 13 years later, your comic is still going, which is
Somnus is still going strong. I mean,
longer than a lot of others.
Massive props to you for that. And obviously Spider Forest, one of the things I like about Spider Forest as well, it's one of those websites that if you just want to look at all of the titles on the Spider Forest website, sometimes when you go to like these webcomic sort of collectors or something, there's not really the thumbnails. It can look a bit samey. The Spider Forest comic, what I like about that page is there's so many different styles and flavors of book. You know, they're so colorful. You know, there's funny ones, there's serious ones. It's a great page to just sort of look at and go, oh, that looks really interesting.
There's loads on here I've recommended.
There's 10 Earth Shattering couple, Blows is still,
yeah, we recommend that when the Spider Forest thing was opened a years ago, and I said to the creator, look, you gotta go for this, and they did. And here they are.
Oh my gosh, there's so much different things going on every time we open applications. I'm just amazed at like, why have I never heard of this thing? Yes, why have I never heard of that thing? It is so hard to like kind of get your name out there, but there is amazing stuff that people are doing in the shadows. You know, just you'd never heard of them until they came to your door and like, hey, we want to join your comic collective, and we're like, yeah, get the heck in here, yes. And I love looking at that page too. It's a beautiful page. Our developer Alyssa did a very good job kind of putting everything together and really highlighting everybody's art and styles, and it's just
shout out to Alyssa. It's a brilliant page. Now, obviously, Spider Forest, there's a few people thinking, I think I'm going to make that comic. They're starting to plan things now. Obviously, we have only scratched the surface of the webcomic conversation. And, Christina, you're going to have to come back again. It's not going to take 5 years next time. but in the meantime, like, you're a fountain of knowledge anyway, because, as you spoke about, you've also got a podcast as well. So that's delving more about sort of web comics. So where can people go to find you and the show and to find out more about this wonderful area of comics?
Oh yeah, absolutely. So you can find my web comic Sombulus at sombulus.com. You can find me on Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram, and mastodon.art at Delfina2K. And then the podcast, which is the Screen Tones webcomic podcast, is at screentonescast.com. And it's the same Screen Tones Cast on Twitter, Tumblr, Instagram. I think that's about it for us. And we're also on Spotify, so you can listen to it there. And then, of course, Spider Forest is the webcomic collective that we've always been talking about. Go to spiderforest.com. You'll see so many great comics to read. And if it's still the month of June when you're listening to this, go ahead and apply, because it is a fantastic place for creators to connect and cross promote and all that good stuff.
Dan has been shouting its praises for years, haven't you?
Yeah.
So definitely go forth and check it out, folks. In all seriousness, Christina, you are going to have to come back, because there's a lot awful.
It's going like to change another couple of years.
Really only just scratched the surface of stuff. So next time we're going to talk a lot more about probably about like, what on earth made you want to do this for 13 years? You're mad. No. But it's all worth it because you clearly love comics.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Yes. That's all we want.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, go check out Christina's stuff and Spider Forest. Thank you, Christina.
Yeah. You've been a legend. Thanks so much for having me on.
Thank you.
Yeah.
And there you go, folks. Well, I sound like a presenter every time that I come back from that. Sort of like, okay. Hey there. Welcome back.
Hey there.
Hey.
Hey, kids.
Hey, kids.
Welcome back. No, we hope you enjoyed that delve into the world of web comics.
And, yeah.
Yes, and now, apologies. I mean, you probably learned something from that. Apologies if you don't learn anything else from like what we say over the next hour or so. Apart from you're going to discover some awesome comics and awesome events and campaigns and stuff.
I've got a cracker to fucking recommend, man. An absolute cracker.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that. Do we have any shout-outs, gents?
Yeah, I've got a couple. Shall I go first?
Yeah, go.
Me and Falpy got together yesterday, Saturday, for Dirty Basement's packaging. So excellent. 1 and 2 are packaged now. It's all been printed. We're just waiting for the money to land from Kickstarter so we can post it, but expect it in your post box in the next couple of weeks. Thanks to Matt Bunce for the comic he sent through this week. He's sort of doing this sort of experimental comic. We've been seeing quite a lot of it on the Slack, and it's been in and out of the art channels and the advice channels. We've been talking about it. It's been really interesting exercise, and I got you should have got yours, Dan, I think.
Okay, cool.
Maybe tomorrow. Vince didn't have your address, so I've got yours, which I posted today.
Okay.
So you should get it, I think, in the next couple of days as well. But yeah, really good, really interesting, very Silver Age, Bronze Age-y kind of. You'll see by the first page.
Love it.
Yeah, it's good stuff. Boning has been a great exercise. I think you'll all agree with me. We love a bit of boning.
I've been sticking my head into the forum because I've not read Bone through. I don't know much about Bone.
Yeah, a lot of people are now finishing up on it. And it's been a lovely exercise. We've been talking a little bit about Razzle and a few other things, not the magazine that we used to read in the 80s. RASL. Yeah, read. And so that's been a really good exercise. So I think maybe in 3 or 4 weeks we'll think of renaming that channel and starting up another read. Yeah. So we're open to suggestions. If you're not on the Slack, then contact one of us and come on. You can join the reading group. It's just a fun little reading group for you. You don't have to be a creator, just be a fan or even a new reader of it and just talk about every couple of issues that you read. It came off the back of Spawn Hub, which Dan and Strotty started and was a nice little fun thing.
I absolutely floundered on Spawn, the Spawn read through.
Oh, you read quite a few, man.
Yeah, I just wasn't enjoying it.
Yeah.
That is quite a bar when you're not enjoying the stuff.
Yeah, yeah. So we'll probably do another one. Yeah. Let's see. We're sort of open to offers at the moment, see what everyone's thinking. Mm. Something that's easily accessible, maybe something that's on an app or on Comixology or fairly cheap where you can buy sort of cheaply, something like that. So we'll do that. Yeah, they're my ones, guys.
Awesome. Dan, Johnny?
I'd love to do an Invincible read-through. But
that'd be a good one, actually.
That's an easy one. That seems maybe a bit too... I don't know. Wait to see what suggestions come out. Or maybe we could watch a poll and see what people want to do.
Yeah, we could do, couldn't we? Yeah.
First off, Bullet Adventures, Superhero Action and Drama and Family Dynamics, Issue 4. Dale learns as much as he can about the present day as Lani does about being a hero. This issue introduces VTuber sensation, the influencer. You'll remember Randy Stone. He was on a previous show.
About 6 months ago.
Pimpin' Bullet Adventures. And this... It's sort of like a soft reboot, the series, because the first Bullet ends in a very definite way and this kind of gets it all going again. And if you're kind of like a fan of the sort of golden age Flash stories about super speedsters, you'll really enjoy Bullet Adventures because I've read issues 1 and 2, I believe. And now we're looking at 3 and 4 and you can get
back the last one. Yeah, yeah.
You can get them all on this campaign. It's absolutely so well put together. I'd highly recommend it if you're a big fan of good superhero comics. Secondly, we've got Boxes Comic Magazine Issue 1, a brand new comic magazine showcasing new short works from a range of exciting and interesting indie comic creators.
I'll back this. Yeah.
I said that about fucking that up. That's great.
Well, I was impressed with that.
Yeah.
Well, slick.
So we're sailing towards the target on that one, done by our friends at Third Bear Press. Go check that out. 72 pages, and you can get that for as little as £6 for a digital PDF. That is
some
fantastic.
Interesting people in that. I know. Bob Turner's in it, isn't he, as well?
Wow, nice. I was scrolling down, seeing all the different
comics by Bob for a while.
The different art styles. Brilliant. So go check that one out. That's great.
Good. Vista.
Nice. I don't have any shout-outs this week, I don't think.
Fair enough.
I think I do.
Can I just give another one? Say Mark Miller, fucking The Ambassadors, the last issue, was it 5 or 6? Yes. I can't remember.
I've not read that yet.
Fuck me, that lands, man. That lands great. Best last page of an issue. You get to the last page, you will laugh.
I know we kind of moving on from the Punisher thing, but he fucking encapsulated.
Yeah, he did.
My
yeah.
thoughts, and he just like an elder statesman of comics, and that this is fucking bullshit. And loads
characters
of people
should be problematic. Yeah, yeah,
loads of them agree with him, and.
Yeah. As and I can't wait for the Pepe Larraz thing he's got. Yeah. Is it Big Game? I can't remember the name of it now, but it's sort of joining up all the universe. So Wanted.
Yeah,
back.
Yeah, Wanted. So Wanted's going to be. You got Nemesis.
Yeah.
In it.
Hit Girl. Yeah. It looks
Nemesis
great.
Is quite fucking overpowered. So I don't know how they're going to.
Yeah, but he's got. He plans ahead, and it's that Batman thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah, yeah.
It's like whatever you plan, or you go for, he's already worked that. Are you going to do that?
Yeah, so he's very excited. And he's a gangster, isn't he, Miller? Because he put that tweet up that said, who should I nick off Marvel and DC next thing, guys?
Yeah.
It made me laugh. Made me laugh. Yeah. The other one, can I also shout out to Howard Chaykin's Substack? If you want to see some retains, well written. I fucking loved the one he wrote yesterday. Brilliantly. Yeah, he wrote it brilliantly. Awesome. So good.
I ordered that, Martin.
I knew I had a shout out.
Oh, go on, there you go.
16th of July is the South London Comic
and Oh, of course it is. Yeah.
Yes.
Returns to Stanley Arts in Norwood. There's loads of talks being organised by Avery Hill Publishing. Kat Chapman got in touch with us about that. Chats such as organising your own comics event, graphic novels in progress, starting your own comics publisher, self-publishing versus working with a publisher, and a Czech graphic literature talk. So some very
as in Czech, the country.
Yeah.
I see Owen D. Pomery's new book's coming soon. Ricky Miller was pimping it today from Avery Hill. That is great. I like Owen's work.
Yeah.
Talk about beautifully detailed stuff. Yeah.
It's going to be a trip down memory lane for me because I used to go to school there.
Stanley.
Nice.
The old one. I imagine that school hall, which I thought was enormous at the time, is rather small now.
Wow, you are quite a big
fella. That's what she said.
Yep. So there is a load of stuff.
I don't know what that makes sense at all. That,
no, but... probably nothing about this show makes sense ever. Says the man who's got to edit it all.
It's the one for you this week.
Before we get on to the recommendations/reviews for this week, Tony, you got a little quiz for us, haven't you?
Oh, a little quiz. Little impromptu quiz. Now, I have a little pile of just fanzine-y type stuff next to me here in Longbox Mountain. And I found a copy of the March 1994 Comic News, which is a UK-based publication to sell comics, got adverts in it and stuff like that. But what it does has, it has the state of the industry, and it's the charts from around the world for comics. And it's got Vertigo titles, how well they sold in February 94. Now, it's got the best-selling Vertigo titles, I think the top 10, and where they were placed in the general charts. So the charts include Spider-Man and Batman and whatever, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I was going to see if you could guess any of them.
Okay.
So this is peak Vertigo as well, but genuinely peak Vertigo.
Okay.
So there's the obvious ones that are going to be in there.
Okay, what ones? Okay. This is 1994, did you say?
Yeah, 1994.
So what we do...
So this is from February 1994.
So obviously going to be Hellblazer.
Hellblazer is the second most popular Vertigo title.
Sandman.
Let me go back to So Sandman is the most popular Vertigo title from that year.
Mm-hmm.
Keep going. Guess a couple more.
Preacher?
No, I don't think Preacher was quite out. That
it
point.
Wasn't out. That's what I was just
95,
thinking.
I'm going to say Preacher one.
Wasn't it? Yeah. Swamp Thing.
Yeah, Swamp Thing's number three. Yeah.
I've got the top three.
Let's have one more.
Tricky ones.
There's a couple more. There's three or four you'll definitely get, I reckon.
Animal Man?
Yes, Animal Man is 1, 2, 3, 6, 7.
Ooh.
Wow, okay.
No, 6, sorry. Yeah, no, 7.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Get one more.
Oh,
I'm struggling on this one.
The one is I think it's had three seasons of a TV series.
Not Swamp Thing. Doom Patrol.
Doom Patrol, yeah. Number 8. So, right, so these are the top titles. Sandman, Hellblazer, Swamp Thing, Sandman Mystery Theatre, number 4.
I've got that.
Black Orchid, number 5. Shade the Changing Man.
Yes.
Yeah.
Number 6. Yeah. Animal Man, number 7. Scarab, don't know about that one. Then Goot, Doom Patrol, then American Freak, then Kid Eternity. Now, what surprised me was the placings or the positions in the charts that they took. So Sandman 59, massive. It was, you know, it won all those Eisners. Yeah. At this point, you know, everyone was fucking on
So
it
in the top 100 comics, it's ranked 59.
Yeah. No, it's Sandman 59, issue 59.
Oh, sorry. Okay, go on.
Yeah. And this is out of the top 300 comics.
Okay.
Right. So where was it positioned, Sandman? So how, where did it come in the charts? The top 300 charts?
Sandman in, itself.
Yeah.
Is this in the
that,
ninth?
That issue.
I'm going to say 14th.
57th.
Fucking hell.
Now, this goes to show that I heard a story anecdotally years ago that Britain kept Vertigo going because of it wasn't as perhaps as loved in America. So let's go down to Hellblazer 76, which I think off the top of my head was the Garth Ennis era, wasn't it? I think Steve Dillon was possibly on it around that time, I'm going to say. Where was that placed?
120.
140. Yeah,
it's Let's weird go. Because there's such an appreciation for these titles.
There really is. They're evergreens, aren't they?
Saying that, their sales are probably infinitely better than whatever comics.
What's the,
also probably selling
what comics? We're looking at the top five there. That issue
At that time, of all comics, it was X-Men was number one. Uncanny X-Men was number two.
Yeah.
Amazing Spider-Man was number three. Pit issue three was number four.
Okay.
Wow. And Wolverine 80 was number five. Number six was Wildcats, X-Men 2099, X-Force, Superman, Adventures of Superman. So Doom Patrol is the eighth most popular Vertigo title. Tell me where you think that was positioned in the charts.
Gotta be 300s.
202.
Okay.
Imagine that was, I think that was the Grant Morrison was on at that point. That's considered an absolute classic.
Yeah. But it says a lot of people with Vertigo and stuff discovered it after the fact. I mean, in my mind, Vertigo made a lot of their bones from trades and, you know, the collections, wasn't it? You know, how many people have volume one of Sandman? What is it? Something Nocturne. I always forget the name.
Yeah, I know what you mean. Yeah,
that's one of those. It's probably in everyone's bookshelf somewhere.
Yeah, it's weird, isn't it? I mean, I was buying, I think, apart from Scarab and Kid Eternity, I bought all those off the shelf.
Who wrote Kid Eternity? Was that Clive Barker? Am I thinking something completely different?
I got a feeling it's...
He wrote one that said it was like Kid something.
I'm going to have to look it up. I've got it, but I've got it behind me, but I can't see it on the shelf.
Yeah.
But it's fascinating. I got a feeling it was... Gaiman or Morrison, wasn't it?
Yeah, it feels like Morrison to me.
Duncan Fregredo and Morrison.
Yeah, it was Morrison. Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, early Fregredo, wasn't it?
Sometimes looking back through these little windows, these little portholes into comics history, it's fascinating just to see
Google can
where we are now compared to where you know.
Ecto Kid was. That's completely fucking.
Ecto Kid, yeah, that's the other one. Yeah,
yeah.
But and with that in mind, I propose this. For future shows. Once a month, we will look back at Tony, because he's got a million encyclopedias and magazines and
some charts.
A top 10 chart of, you know, of comics like that was there, and see what was the hotness, what was selling, what was, you know, what was the flavour of comics at that particular time. And we'll do it in the boom periods, we'll do it in the down periods, we'll do it in all kinds of periods. But I think that's a fascinating... It sort of opens your eyes to sort of like, wow, you know, this was huge. I mean, obviously, when you say X-Men number one, of course, that was when X-Men ruled the world. You know, that was...
That was X-Men 31, that one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, that's no surprise. But I think it's definitely, this is something we should do in the future, too.
I got the trading card sales from that period as well. So, first was Creators Universe, I can't remember what that is.
Yeah.
Batman the Animated Series number two.
Yeah,
Warriors of Plasm was the third best-selling comic trading cards. Yeah. Good Guys Genesis album and Deep Space Nine was number five.
Okay. Well, who knows if... No, will we ever have an episode on trading cards? Who knows?
But, no, I've got loads of binders of them. Haven't you? Did you buy them?
No, I didn't have them. I had a few. There was... was it the Hildebrand Brothers? You know when they did the painted ones, those over the top? Was it the Hildebrand?
Yeah, I know. Yeah.
That was a sort of boom when I was at my X-Men reading, you know, the height of it.
Yeah.
But no, fascinating stuff. And something that we'll definitely keep an eye on, because I think it gives people a bit of a perspective of... sometimes, in order to write your future, you've got to know your history.
Oh, mate, yeah, completely. Yeah, I'm a great believer in that. Yeah, otherwise, how do you know that what you're writing hasn't been done before?
Yeah.
Indeed.
Yeah. There's something to be said for writing completely in the dark so that you're not copying from someone. But sometimes, yeah, well, you do need to be aware of what came before.
Yeah.
Okay, time to recommend some comics to our lovely listeners. I was planning to do not one, but two comics. Two comics of one series, actually.
Yeah.
This week.
You're having a rethink, aren't you?
But I'm going to talk about it next on the next episode because I just want to make some notes about it. I want to do it justice, if that makes sense.
Yeah. All right. That's the new one, isn't it?
Yeah. Justice. But don't worry because there's still plenty more. Because Tony, you've got a couple. So do you want? Top and tell Dan?
Yeah, baby. Dirty laugh out of Dan. Good.
Yeah.
My first one was kindly sent to us by the marvelous people at Europe Comics. Still sending us comics, which is great. I know they sort of slightly changed their model, but they're still putting out some amazing stuff. And this one is went into my now top 13 comics so far this year that I've enjoyed 10 out of 10. So this one is originally by, I think, Dupuis, the French publisher. It's The Monstrous Dreams of Mr. Providence. Definitely for you, V. I sent you some of the images, didn't I?
Yeah,
it
looked beautiful.
Yeah. 126 pages by Darius Schmidt. Now, for those who are following it, this got nominated for an Eisner for Best Painter Multimedia Artist. I don't fucking know why, to be fair. There's like a million other categories I'd have put this in before then, but for some reason, the four knuckleheads who are the judges at the Eisners have put it in for that one. But who knows why? It's got a foreword by Philip Drouillet, who wrote that in 2022. So it's a very up to date book, and it's a Lovecraft inspired Gothic French BD album style comic. I read it digitally. Mr. Providence, who you might guess at, he may have had the initials HP at some time in his life, but it looks very like him. If you go online, you can see some of the images of it. So he's the caretaker of a city park, a very strange city park, it has to be said. And as night falls, it's full of creatures who communicate with him in what can only be described as dream logic, I'm going to say, hallucination logic. He's got a cat who's called Mr. Maldera, and the stroke monster, and there's very much a sort of occult things going on in this park. I'd put good money on them thinking let's stage it in a cemetery. It's almost got that sort of gothic nature to it, but it's a park full of steps and lakes and higgledy-piggledy buildings and cottages and stuff. The occult punishes skeptics and wreaks vengeance on those who deny its power is one of the quotes in this. And it's full of these sort of dark trees and dark spaces. And a lot of this happens at nighttime around sort of spiraling staircases. And there's various characters and people and groups of people who are always seemingly in this park, argumentative, snarky, appearing, transforming, giving interesting statements or giving confusing statements or appearing up trees or underwater. And I think my summary of would be this is incredibly beautiful, but often doesn't make much sense. But then again, dreams don't, do they? I think is the idea.
Yeah. The dreamlike nature of it. As soon as you sent the pictures, I thought Tony loves this. And I can see why.
Mm. Oh man, yeah. It's just fucking strange. There's a bit where it's all centered around this book. There's this dark book that's discovered at the bottom of this lake, pond, lake, sea thing that's in the middle of this park, which forms quite a narrative focus for a lot of the story. It's got that dream, when you swim to the bottom of the sea in a dream, you don't necessarily worry about whether you can breathe or not, can you? You're just looking around. You know, there's an anxiety element to it, I think, you know, the sort of cheese dream anxiety thing going on. But there's some beautiful images of, there's a returning image of some koi carp, believe it or not, that form, that at one point kids transform into koi carp headed kids. All these koi carps are either massive or small or flying or leading. And at the bottom of this water is this massive castle, stately home type arrangement. To say this is all 126 pages of comic is not true. The last, I'm going to say, quarter of the book is an illustrated, also by Daria Schmidt, an illustrated story from 1931 by Lovecraft called The Strange High House in the Mist, which is also put into the back of this. So you get a Lovecraft story as well. I didn't read that. I only really read the comic thing. I'm kind of more hung up on the comics for this. You read this for the art, I would say. If it was a short story, you'd read it. But I think the real push on this for me is the art in it, which is absolutely stunning. And it uses a couple of pages of black and white, followed by a couple of pages that will have just a few green items in it or a few salmon-coloured items in it or stuff like that. And then suddenly pages will be much more multicoloured. Not loads and loads of colours, sometimes maybe three or four at the most, but it uses colour in a really interesting way. Sometimes it will have a black and white element and a colour element within the same panel, if that makes sense. So the caretaker of the park sometimes, often, is just in black and white. His cat might just be in black and white. The three women who seemingly live up a tree will be in black and white, but they'll be surrounded by the water, which is green, octopus imagery, which is green and pink, or koi carp, which are green and pink, surrounding them, floating in the air and stuff like that. So God only knows how long this took to draw. One page of this is, you know, could be parlayed into a whole issue of Marvel Comics, I've got to tell you. I have these little sections when I write notes, and it's sort of just like bullet points. And one is like, you know, a criticism of it. Have I got any criticisms of it? And I think, yeah, it is a weird story that does go round and round a bit. But I would say there's no need to worry about it. I just sat there and looked at it and read it, and I didn't worry about this sort of solid 3-act structure or 5-act structure or anything like that, or where character development was going. You live in this weird logic that this book lives within, and there is absolute non sequitur dialogue. People would just come out with things. They're not necessarily there to lead the plot in any direction, but they're there to just provide a certain feeling and a certain vibe as this sort of strange horror. But it's like Lewis Carroll on amphetamine. You know, it's got that sort of sense to it somewhere. And it really does dazzle you with the sort of the art, which is in a way also sort of daftly whimsical and oddball. But characters, you remember them. They sit in your memory. And Lovecraft himself, you can see is kind of the model for the main character in this, has such a fucking strange look about him, doesn't he? You know, the photographs that exist of Lovecraft, you think, that dude, you wouldn't want to see him in a dark alley, would you? You know, maybe like 3 or 4, maybe more, maybe 5 years ago, but everyone was red hot on Lovecraft, weren't they?
Yeah. Yes.
It was like everyone was talking about him. But I think, hasn't some sort of personal opinions have crept into the narrative as to whether we should like him or not? And I think people are backing off a little bit of Lovecraft. But I think, he, him and his contemporaries, you know, have created the base for a lot of the stories that we continue to read today, yeah. You know.
Yeah. I mean, certainly, no matter how problematic the creators are, the Lovecraftian world. Lovecraftian,
yeah,
is a descriptive term of it. So, yeah. You know,
I'd always be concerned when people talk about Lovecraft stuff to don't be engaged in presentism, because the views that he held back in the day were the views of the time, and everyone was fine about it. To sort of look back in the lens, there's stuff we're saying now that in 50, 60 years they look back and think, fucking hell, why are you talking like that? That's disgusting.
They're abhorrent views.
It is what it is.
And the stories that he wrote that had those views in are shit.
Yeah, like you don't want those opinions, but like that's what they were at the time. So just sort of like stick your head in the sand and say, oh, no, I can't do that. Well, you know,
we'll end up cutting ourselves off to everything in the world.
History is full of fucking horrible stuff. It's just.
Yeah, and it's something to be learned from.
Yes,
but this
doesn't exist. Yeah, it's not
this is incredible. It's beautiful. I think you can get it on Comixology. If they haven't done, someone fast needs to pick this up. Previous work of Daria has been Aqua Altata, which is from Casterman. You can buy a physical copy of that from the from a couple of places online. Daria works in comics and illustration, lives in Paris. I'm sure she's probably at this point got quite a sore hand from drawing all this stuff. She's also got a background in movie and TV design. So that's my first one. The Monstrous Dreams of Mr. Providence. Get on it.
There you go. Damn, right, what's so got?
I've got Mahoney's issue 6, the final issue of this storyline. Mahoney's the bar where nobody knows your name, which is essentially very similar to the Marvel, the bar with no name. Was that what they used to call it?
Yeah.
T? Mm.
Yeah.
A place for supervillains to go and drink. This story arc has been built up to a big alien invasion, which this final issue is the payoff where it all goes down and the storyline is essentially resolved. It's got some backup strips in it, which are absolutely great. One of my favorites is by one of my favorite artists, Lee Gaston, who's been a Vanguard reader for a long time. He's done some fan art for the comic. He's done an absolutely great strip. And it's got a section here where Rich Carrington, the writer, who drew, had a go at drawing the same comic, and he's put his pages in there as thumbnail as like tiny little 6 to a page. And you can look and see what Gaston's done working from the same script. It's an interesting little thing to look between the two. And you got a lovely Jim Lee homage cover on the front by artist Brian Dawson. Did I mention the writer Rich Carrington? I'm not sure. Yeah. I did. Okay, so it's created by Rich Carrington and Brian Dawson. It's, if you like your superhero stuff, for your boots, I think it's great. And you can find out more about that and all the other comics at hardlinecomics.com. I don't want to talk too much about the story and kind of ruin it, but Brian, kind of as an artist, I gave some feedback. I think we all gave some feedback, and he's kind of identified that and changed. And I've seen his artwork improve and get better and better over the issues. So now when it's absolutely just solid, lovely stuff. Yeah, really approve. So can't wait to see some more from him.
Nice.
And Gaston, Lee Gaston. Go check him out on Insta or Twitter, because it's fucking lovely work.
Awesome. Tony, take us home.
Before I do, it was Jill McCoy at Eurocomics who sent me that. So, yes. Thanks,
thank you, Jill.
Yeah, it's very kind of it. And she gave me some secret knowledge about what's happening with Mrs. Marini, who we're obviously big fans of.
Hey, yeah.
Coming soon. So my second one is kindly sent to me by Shane Chebsey, just about 6 months ago as well, we had him on.
Yes, talking about his Dracula comic.
That's it, yeah.
The cover of which is fucking banger. Every time I see that on social media,
one of the best indie covers. Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Hmm. This is, get this, Claudia Christian's Dark Legacy, issue 1, Prey. yes, it is that Claudia Christian, who I'm a massive fan of Babylon 5. I think it's one of the best TV series ever made. So she's on that. She's also did a movie with Steven Seagal, which I'm a massive fan of. And she plays a stripper in The Hidden. So what can be better than that?
That hit film, The Hidden, is great.
Great film, isn't it? Isn't it good?
Carl McLaughlin, is that his name?
Yeah, it is, yeah. So this comic is created and written by Claudia and Chris McCauley. Artwork by Staz Johnson. It's pretty cool. I think issue 2, which is currently funding on Kickstarter, is drawn by Glenn Fabry. So get that. Colours by Matt Soffey, who's... I did a story with Matt, and me and Ian Coloured Ian's art on a story we did years ago. Letters by Rob Jones. Character models are based on Claudia... Bruce Boxleitner and Patricia Tallman, all from Babylon 5. So that's going to be pretty interesting. Designed by Andy Bloor. This is like a catalog of people we know or wouldn't know.
Yeah.
Cover art by Alex Ronald, Ben Oliver, and Mark Montague. Editor and publisher is Shane Chebsey. Published by Scratch Comics. This is actually an anthology because there's a couple of different things in here. The front and the back is what I would describe as a pulp story. A text story with illustrations over, which is also about the main character from Claudia's story, but it also features Jake Reeves, who's a sheriff on Mars, who's based on Boxleitner. Now, those that saw Babylon 5 know that Mars played a big part in, is it season 3 or season 4, with the Garibaldi character. It's got a to be continued, and then you go and read it at the end of the story. Very pulpy for me, interesting. I'm going to say it's a strange choice to have up front in the comic, but because it's quite a thick deal, this comic, it kind of works in a way. The whole comic actually opens with Claudia Christian writing about how this is a sci-fi comic with themes of reconciliation, loss, betrayal, and hope. And she speaks about how her and Chris McCauley wanted something that would resonate with Babylon 5 fans. And they've definitely succeeded as far as I'm concerned with that. The comic is about a woman called Jessica Steele, physically modeled on Miss Christensen Christian, and the galaxy is coming out of has been in some quite dark times, and it's coming out of that now into a better time. But there's a lot of stuff, bad deeds from the past, that are coming back to haunt people. And the main story opens with a little history lesson on the road that you get to the sort of current civilization, featuring battles and mech, which looks a bit like a Warhammer mech to me, but I don't know. There's some corrupt, corporation called Confed. And there's also a character who looks a bit like a Star Wars character to me. So it's got that sort of empire feel to it, a part of it, you know, but positioned from a sort of big business kind of situation. The main character, she's working as an adjudicator on one of Jupiter's mining platforms, and she's investigating. She's gone there to investigate a series of murders, and the victims have been torn apart with someone's bare hands, which harks back to something you get as a little preview moment in the opening of the story about this character in mech armor. That's where the story kicks off. It's full of action. It's got a real Outland vibe, if you saw the Connery movie Outland, you know, where you're on a sort of mining station, something's killing people, there's a conspiracy with big business going on. It's got that feeling about it. And there is actually a local sheriff, local sort of chief of security character, who does look like Connery a little bit.
Nice.
Yeah, which is quite cool. It's just a good action story, really, to be fair. We do get a full story. It's not like a preview comic, you know, like issue one of a lot of comics these days, fuck what happens. But there's loads that happens in this one. And it opens up in the last few pages with it. It's got a full story in it, put it that way. But it also, in the end, teases and lays the threads out for future conspiracies and storylines and stuff like that, which is really good. And you get more of the Patricia Tallman character appearing. Stas Johnson knows what he's doing, doesn't he? He's totally. there's clearly a couple of homages he's thrown in here. You get the Star Wars reference and you get the Warhammer reference, and you get loads of lovely DL pencils in the back of it, which if you were an inker, would be the best thing to print off and like practice inking on, I'd say. It's full of work in progress kind of stuff in it as well, and also character designs. It's a cracker. Look out. Issue 2 is currently kickstarting, where you can get issues 1 and 2. I don't know how I missed the first issue, because I'm a fan of Claudia's work as well. And we've got a big shout out from, I've got some mutual friends, Bob and Val, with Claudia. So I always thought I'll probably bump into her at some point. But the issue 2 is Kickstarter. So get on that. I'll back both issues on Kickstarter with the Glenn Favre thing. If you're looking to sign up to Twitter, you can at Scratch Comics on Twitter or scratchcomics.co.uk online. And you can follow Claudia at official Claudia Christian on Instagram. She was actually at the Spin Planet yesterday signing copies.
Ah, fantastic.
Yes, that's pretty cool. I think she's obviously over in the UK at the moment. But yeah, good stuff. There you go. That's my second one. Claudia Real. Christian's Dark Legacies 1, Prey, as in P-R-E-Y. There you go.
Nice. There you go, folks. Tons to check out this week, be it online, print, no matter what you like, as long as it's comics. That's why you're here.
Yeah.
So keep the conversation going in any way you want.
Buy him, read him, make him.
Exactly. I like that, Dan. Very nice. There's several different ways you can get in touch with us. You can email us awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Follow us on social media at The Awesome Pod. We have a Slack community, which is the app Slack, of course.
It's been cracking today. Loads on there.
Lots of different channels and groups, lots of different discussions about making comics, or just for the love of comics. If you want to join that community, then just get in touch with us, join up there, because it's just a very comics positive place that we're very proud of, and wonderful people there. So yeah, definitely get in touch about that. Thank you for listening to us, whether it was on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. You can also find us on Apple Podcasts, where subscribe, like, leave a review, helps get the word out about the show and everything we talk about on a weekly basis. And we're on other sort of formats like Spotify, Amazon, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What are the networks we on, Tony?
Well, we're on a network called Pod. All I can say is she was lucky that she was wearing a Mississippi windshield in the disabled toilet at Greg's.
There's more to that. I want to find out about that.
I'm just moving.
Why not Google Mississippi windshield?
Don't, listeners. Just don't. Around this time of the show, yeah. If he says anything, for fuck's sake, don't Google it.
It's fine.
We do hope you have enjoyed this episode.
Join us
next week for more great comics chat. And who knows what we'll be talking about, but we're going to have some fun talking about it anyway. So you just have to join us next week to see what that is. Until then, where can people find us online, etc., Tony?
NeverOnAnything.com, where you can find that review of Glasgow Comic Con if you don't know.
Yes.
Nice.
Well worth a read.
Dan?
You can find me on Twitter at Vanguard Comic, and you can read Vanguard at VanguardComic.com. So remember that the code is for the Big Cartel Store ACP. You get free shipping in the UK.
There you go. Yep.
I'll make more noise about that tomorrow.
And just like
Spider Christina, Forest is not about spiders.
Nope, it's not. And
or forests.
There's if you haven't read Vanguard yet, there is an awful lot of Vanguard to check out. So start at the beginning and work your way up.
Man, there's a lot of characters dying in this issue. You're gonna love it.
I know. I just a couple of pages. I was like, what? I loved the latest couple of pages. Just awesome.
Yeah, got a lot of nice comments, didn't it, on the line as well.
Cheers, what
happened just before with the chair and the gun shortly afterwards? I wasn't expecting that. So we'll talk about this. Oh, you upset me on a daily basis, Dan. Anyway, you can find me.
Yeah, upsets me for other reasons.
You can find me on social media at Jester Diablo. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you to Christina for joining us and talking about webcomics. We'll be back fairly soon. And from Dan, Tony, and myself, wherever you are in the world, we hope you're happy, healthy, reading lots of comics that you enjoy, and making comics that you're having fun making, because that's what it's all about. That's why we're here on a weekly basis. And me and Dan love you. Tony does as well, but you're not going to admit it, are you?
No.
Yeah,
he does. Neither do I, nor will I admit it.
If you don't say anything, then you love them.
Anyway, you're not going to get me to sing again. You're trying to get me to sing again.
Oh, well, one day. One day. You just have to stay tuned to After the Credits to see what happens this week.
See what fun unlocks.
Put that joke in, I told you.
There may not be anything.
He never tells us either. He just chooses something.
I like to surprise them.
Yeah.
And yes. So have a great week, folks. And from everyone at ACP, keep reading loads of comics. Keep making loads of comics. And there's something else. What is it that they should do?
Stay awesome.
Stay awesome.
Can't say it better myself. See ya.
See ya. Here I am talking to myself. That is the essence of chaos. Do, 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 do.